Good morning. Welcome into the 9 to 10 show. This is Friday, of course. That makes it a Forensic Friday and American DA Live. Special guest with us in the studio along with Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson. Brought to you by Landscapers Corner at 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Landscapers Corner has the largest selection of natural stone in our area. Call them at 225-9433. Our question of the day is brought to you by United Structural Systems, a professional repair company, foundation repair company, in business for over 20 years. iFixFoundations.com, 859-254-7700. The question is, with three crashes, airplane crashes in a week, are you getting nervous about flying? Tell us at WVLKAM.com. Tune in for the results with Cruiser and Crew between noon and 3. Yesterday's results: will the Affordable Care Act survive the latest court challenge? We were split, 43% yes, 43% no, and 14% said the courts won't decide it. Congress will fix it. Good morning, Ray Larson.
Good morning,
How
Jack.
Are you this morning?
I'm just lovely.
You went to a national prosecutors meeting last week, and you always come back real energized from those things, and you got some good guests lined up for us.
Yes, I do. This is... Allison Beck is our superstar in the office that tells us what's coming up and puts it on our Facebook and website and sends it to you. Mm-hmm. And this is a great title: engaging in high-risk activity greatly increases the likelihood of violent crime.
Yep.
And that's exactly what we're talking about here today. And with us is the prosecutor of this homicide case, Andrea Williams.
Morning,
Andrea.
Also with us is the victim's advocate who worked this case with Andrea, and that is Brianna Pursley.
Hey, Brianna.
Hey.
And also with us today is Sergeant Pete Ford, who is a sergeant with the robbery and homicide unit in the Lexington Police Department.
And Pete, good morning.
Good morning.
I got to give a shout out to those folks, those men and women in that homicide unit. They've got a lot of work to do, but you know, they always seem to have a lot to do, and they solve
all the murders.
Well, they last 2 years they solved them all, and these that we got pending right now are a little more difficult, but I feel very comfortable that they're going to solve them.
Pete, how long have you been a policeman?
22 years.
All that time with Urban County Government, with Lexington?
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Good, great.
So, Andrea, why don't you very quickly step up to that microphone?
She's got new glasses that I really like.
Thanks,
those
Jack.
Very cool.
She's
Thanks.
Trying to be hip.
She's very hip,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think glasses are good.
I do, too. Yeah. I like glasses.
I think
I
people
too.
That wear glasses seem to be a little smarter than anybody else.
Right. We like to think that anyway.
No, it's true.
Oh, it is? Okay. Yeah. All right.
Okay, Andrea, tell us about why is this title, Engaging in High-Risk Activity, why does that greatly increase the likelihood of violent crime?
In this case, back in July of 2012, a young woman named Brittany Shipman knew of an individual named Saul Ruiz Perez, who... he had a day job, but at night he sold drugs. So she knew that there would be large amounts, or she thought there would be large amounts of cash in his apartment that would be easy to rob. So she enlisted the help of her friend Kirby Ruano to go and rob the victim in this case. And Mr. Ruano enlisted two of his friends, Juan Chavarria and Joseph Sales. And on July 16th of 2012, they had information. Brittany had given them information about when the victim would be home or not home, when he was at his day job versus when he would be at home at night. And they went over there on the night of July the 16th. The three defendants did. And busted down the victim's door in order to rob him of cocaine and money, and ultimately ended up shooting and killing him.
Were they all three armed?
Yes, all three of the individuals were armed. The police, after they did the forensic suspects at the house actually found four different, well, they found three different types of shell casings, but then they also discovered that the victim in the case was armed. He apparently fired also because they found evidence that he had fired his gun after the door had been busted in. And then the three individuals who went over there, Mr. Ruano, Mr. Sales, and Mr. Chavarria, all shot also. So there were various count or various number of shell casings that went to three different guns.
One of the issues, Jack, is with all this gunfire going on in this apartment, and it's in a, it's an apartment little complex. Mm-hmm. It's like a motel that has the entrance from the street,
yeah,
and then two stories, and you have that sort of entrance. And the apartments are there are a number of apartments, yes, there, right, Pete?
Yes.
And they, so when you have that kind of gunfire going on, typically those are not solid masonry walls.
Yeah, somebody else can get shot in the next apartment.
Somebody else next door can get shot. And that is exactly how a lot of bystanders and people get killed that are just innocent,
yeah,
bystanders. So, Pete, so what happens? So you get this kind of a call. And tell me about what do the police do right away?
As soon as we get there, like we got there on that scene, we assessed, we do a quick assessment of the crime scene, trying to see exactly what we have. And then we start fanning out in the neighborhood and doing a neighborhood investigation, contacting. We just start knocking on doors and just asking people what, if anything, they may have seen or heard. And that's going to be something that needs to be done as soon as possible, because we're going to start getting leads from that. And from those leads, sometimes we can start putting things together rather quickly. And I believe on that one, within about 2 hours, I think we started getting some leads to run with on that particular case.
So the TV is right. There is a time frame by which, as it gets further in, you're getting colder and colder. When it just happens, it's as hot as it's going to get. And then it just starts to cool down, right? So you need to act very quickly.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
That's the 48 hours TV show that says if you don't solve it in 48 hours, typically it will take longer. Now, Brianna, tell us what you do in the crime fighting office of the Commonwealth's Attorney.
Okay. Victims advocates work with victims of violent crimes within Fayette County. And in this particular case, the family did live out of county. However, they also were only Spanish speaking. It wasn't until I made a phone call and then made another phone call that I did find a little sister that did speak English fluently, and she would translate to mother. Obviously, the mom needs to know what's going on. That's her son whose life was taken. So we do have a prosecutor, Alex Garcia, who was able to translate for mom so we could explain to her what had happened and that caused her son's death.
So is your responsibility in our office to keep families up to date on what's going on in the court system and all of that sort of business?
That's correct. Education, information, and notification is the victim's advocate's job.
Did the mom live out of state?
No, they just live out of county.
Okay.
Andrea, we got all kind of shooting going on from everybody, including the victim. And you got three... Was it three or four defendants in this case?
There were four defendants, three of which were charged with his murder. The three men were charged with murder and robbery. And Brittany Shipman, the person who set it all up, was charged with robbery.
Okay, now Pete, talk to us as the investigators of this kind of a situation. Tell us a little bit about, so you set up the neighborhood canvas where you're going to go talk to all of the people that live in the vicinity there and say, what did you hear, what did you see, that kind of stuff. But so what else are the detectives with the homicide unit up to? What are they? What kind of assignments do they get?
Well, we'll have at least one detective will go to the hospital and work with one of the forensics, one of our detectives that's assigned with the forensic services unit. They will gather the clothing and any evidence that may come from the victim and do a quick analysis of that. And when I say by analysis, that means if there's anything they can gather from what has been gathered from what the victim may have had in his possession that may lead to some clues. Another detective will more than likely go down to police headquarters and start doing research in the various computer systems and find out a little bit about our victim. And if we have started getting information about possible suspects, then we will also start working up information on our suspects and start running on those and finding out what we can about our suspects, and then if that can lead to an arrest, then we'll go ahead and do that.
We're going to take a break right here. 253-59. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson with us this morning, along with Assistant Commonwealth Attorney Andrea Williams. By the way, Andrea, you told me a long time ago, usually handles these complicated white-collar crimes, but this is a murder case.
Well, nobody specializes in our job.
But she does kind of specialize in that.
Well,
sort of.
What she has is some expertise in that area.
And victims advocate Brianna Persley is with us, Sergeant Pete Ford from the police department. And if you just tuned in, if we have a theme today, which I think we do, it's high-risk activity increases the likelihood of violent crime. And if this person who was killed had not been a drug dealer, then he'd be walking around today.
That's right.
Yeah. Right?
Probably.
Probably, yeah.
One of the things that Pete said was the detective goes to the hospital when somebody is shot and ultimately dies to collect clothing and that sort of thing. And so they get the clothing, Pete. Now, and what do they do with that? Why collect the clothing?
It's very important because there could be evidence on there such as blood or gunshot residue, and that will help us in determining, whether we have the suspect's blood or how close the shooter was to the victim. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you may be able to determine if the victim may have done a self-inflicted gunshot wound. So there's a number of different things that we're looking for.
So they collect that, and Andrea said that there were a number of different types of shell casings found.
Yeah.
And so what happens with the shell casings, Andrea?
Those are also sent to the Kentucky State Police Laboratory to make a determination as to whether or not those shell casings were fired from the same gun or different guns. And ultimately, if a gun is found, it would be compared to a gun to determine if that shell casing was shot from that gun. In this case, we never recovered any of the guns. However, the Kentucky State Police Lab was able to determine that there were three different types of shell casings that were fired from three different guns.
Three different calibers?
Some of them were the same caliber.
Really?
However, they were able to tell by the markings on the case that this many shell casings were shot from this gun, this many shell casings were shot from this gun, and this many shell casings were shot from a third gun. So and then they compared, there was a fragment of a bullet that was recovered from the victim's body, and we were able, or the lab was able to determine that bullet was fired from a particular type of gun and matched at least one of the sets of shell casings.
Indulge me for just a second. I don't usually do this personal stuff on the air, but I just wanted to share with you that my son Wesley, who's at Eastern, his girlfriend just got a job a few months ago with the Columbus Police Department doing exactly that. She went through the criminal whatever program at Eastern, and she's a gun specialist.
Yes.
So I think that's pretty interesting.
Firearms
specialist.
There we go. She's a firearms examiner.
Got it. We're going to take a break. Update from the information.
Mm-hmm.
9:36, 24 before 10, News Talk 590 WVLK. It's a Forensic Friday, and Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson is with us, Assistant Commonwealth's Attorney Andrea Williams, Victims Advocate Brianna Persley, and Sergeant Pete Ford from the Police Department. Ray?
Okay, so let's... A lot of home invasions, Pete, are just exactly what's happened here. Dope dealers are being robbed and sometimes assaulted, sometimes murdered by other people that want to rob them because they figure they either got drugs or they've got money. Is that a fair? Well, I know it's fair.
Yes, yeah. Most definitely.
But the average person has a fear of one of these crimes because we hear about it all the time.
Yes.
But what we don't know is that, a lot of time, the background of it, and that they're criminals that are ripping off other criminals.
Well, that's right. And so what happens is that we end up with our victim being involved in this high-risk business of selling dope or drugs. And Brianna, you're having to deal with the family on this, and so one of the things we are in our office is what we call brutally honest, and some people are just a little softer in getting the message out, and Brianna's one of them. I'm, of course, a little less sensitive about it. But so how did you communicate that with the family, that, look, your loved one is, in fact, involved in this high-risk dope-selling business?
Well, with a lot of Hispanic victims, they do have several jobs so that they can earn money to send money to family members to help family out. In this case, that does apply. He did have a job, of course, that he told Mom about. It was his day job. She, however, did not know that he was involved in illegal activity, so that was completely a shocker to her.
So how did they...
How did she react to that? Was she...
Well, her reaction was just kind of like a shock and like, oh. But, you know, at the same time, the mother kicks in where you're like, well, that still doesn't mean that my child should have died. And we want them to pay for what they've done, which is taking his life.
Yeah. Well, and, of course, that's the position we take, is that we don't in any way, shape, or form condone the dealing drugs, but we also are not into condoning, in any way, shape, or form,
killing somebody.
That's right. Exactly right.
Yeah.
So that was a big hurdle, and we have to do that, share that kind of information more time than we really care to talk about. But that's one of the things that Brianna does. And Brianna is a... Brianna has a talent, and her talent is people.
Yeah.
And we get lots and lots of compliments about her. I hate to say that in front of her, but we do.
Thanks, Ray.
Now, Andrea, let's talk about defendants, and we've got, okay, so what are you going to do? Who's charged with what? And now you got to prove what happened, and how do you go about that? Because this seems to be kind of an evidentiary nightmare.
Well, it was interesting, I guess, to say the least, in trying to prove who the actual shooter was. Or they all three shot. However, we will never know whose gun killed the victim in this case. However, because all three of the individuals went over there with the intent to rob the victim, and all three individuals shot, they were all three responsible for his murder. So they all three were charged with his murder. The police did an excellent job, of course, in this case, in finding and getting statements from two of the individuals involved, Mr. Ruano and Mr. Chavarria. The police actually tracked Mr. Ruano to California soon after he committed this murder, along with his two co-defendants. He took on a different name, got on a bus, and hopped on out to California, where the police ultimately found him, went there.
How did they find him if he has a different name?
Well, they got some information that sometimes he uses a different name, and then they just started looking at different modes of transportation, I guess. And they went and they talked to the Greyhound people, got information from them, and saw that he had used this fake name and had gone to California. And they tracked the defendant's family to California and ultimately worked with the police out in California and went out there and found him, Kathy, and interviewed him.
Kathy Witt's group went out there, I take it, right?
No, well, this they was transport him back.
Yeah. Oh, they do?
That's what they do, yeah.
This was actual detectives from the robbery homicide unit.
Oh,
the
really?
Two homicide detectives went out to California after they had gotten the information that Mr. Ruano was most likely involved and found him.
And do they travel commercial airline?
Yeah. Yes.
And how do you go about getting this character in the plane and not being conspicuous and blah, blah, blah?
Well, that's the role of the sheriff's department. Once the arrest is made, then they will do the transportation back to Lexington.
Okay, I'm completely confused because that's what I said originally. Okay. And you guys said, no, our police department did.
Our police department, or the Lexington Division of Police, went out and solved it. They had L.A. detectives with them. The L.A. detectives actually took Mr. Ruano into custody because our police department doesn't have jurisdiction in California.
Okay.
And they hold him until the sheriff's department can come and transport him back to Kentucky to face the charges.
They do. The sheriff's department does the extradition.
Transportation, in other words. Yeah,
remember Jonathan Buckley, the guy that walked out on his rape?
Yes.
A trial. And they found him 11 months later in Wyoming, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's arrested, and then we go through the extradition proceeding. And once he's ordered to come back extradited, then Kathy Witt and her department goes and gets him and brings him back.
One thing I don't understand, one of many things I don't understand, is when you hear somebody waives extradition. Mm-hmm. Is that saying, I'm not going to come back to Kentucky to face those charges? What does that mean?
That means that they're ready to come back. Extradition is a process, a court process, where the person comes to court. You have to identify him as the person that's charged in Kentucky, for example, and that's the guy, and that there's a legitimate charge against him. Once that's determined, then the judge will enter an order ordering him to come back here.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when the sheriff's office goes out.
But they don't have a choice.
Yeah.
They can fight it.
Yeah, they can fight it, but it's a pretty simple process. I got to prove that Jack Patty is Jack Patty and that you have a legitimate legal charge against you in Kentucky.
I see.
Once that's proven to the court,
you're on your way. Okay.
Yeah, that's the way it is.
And if you waive it, there's not necessarily, you don't have to do as much paperwork and that sort of thing, and you get back to Kentucky faster than you would.
Okay.
If you fight it, you have to get governor's warrants and those sorts of things, and that can take anywhere from 30 to 60 to 90 days. So you're delayed in your proceedings in Kentucky because you're fighting extradition in California or
so
wherever.
This guy didn't fight it.
He did not.
Yeah.
He did not.
Okay, but who are the detectives that were working on this, Pete?
Detective Bill Breslin.
Yes, he's the lead, and we always like to. These guys do a good job.
Yes, they do. And he's been on with us.
Even Breslin.
Yeah. I'm going to take a break right now because we have an opportunity here to do that. If you have a question or comment, we're learning today. 253-5959. Touch *590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere. 1-877-777-0590. Email jackpatty at wvlkam.com. 9:45, a quarter before 10. That's time to get the highest price for your scrap gold at the Castle. Discounters of diamonds and fine jewelry. Here's the forecast. Mostly sunny, low to mid-80s today. Tonight, partly cloudy, low 60s. Saturday, partly sunny, chance of thunderstorms. Afternoon and overnight, high temperature tomorrow of 90. And on Sunday, showers, thunderstorms likely. And a high in the low 80s. Right now, we have partly cloudy skies.
Get connected, get entertained, get local with Newstalk 590 WVLK. Your favorite show streamed right to your computer, tablet, or smartphone. Download the WVLK app today at WVLKAM.com.
For the thousands of wounded warriors returning from battle, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a unique program that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to the civilian workplace. The Warriors to Work program also works with companies to find the right job for the right warrior. Contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.
People are always looking to invest in a good opportunity. So what if you could invest in the future of kids, like a stock? Not the kind of stock that's about making money, but a stock for social change called Better Futures. With your investment, it helps students like me go to college. My name is Charles, and I'm your dividend.
Invest in better futures with UNCF. Visit uncf.org/invest. A mind is a terrible thing to waste, but a wonderful thing to invest in. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
On the next episode of Recipes for Disaster.
So we've got our neighbor Paul coming over tonight for a barbecue, which is why I prepared a delicious lemon rosemary steak marinade from my special collection of old family recipes. To make sure the steaks are extra, extra, extra tender, I left them marinating out on the counter overnight, just like Nana used to.
Maria may mean well, but without food safety, it never ends well. Always thaw or marinate foods in the refrigerator at 40 degrees Fahrenheit or below, or you could make your friends and family really sick. Maria's neighbor Paul didn't think twice about the steak he ate until he was presenting his company's financial forecast to the board. That's when a sudden bout of food poisoning made it explicitly clear that profits weren't the only thing on the rise. Oh. Watch Recipes for Disaster at foodsafety.gov. You'll learn the right steps as Maria does everything wrong. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
When Dad needed help getting around, I became his driver. Any daughter would do the same. But soon enough, he needed help doing more things. And it was up to me to be his personal shopper and financial manager, too. And before I knew it, Dad moved in with me. So I became his cook, his personal assistant, his physical therapist, and even his nurse. When I started taking care of Dad, I didn't realize all the roles I'd have to play. But no matter what, I know I'm still his daughter.
We understand the many roles you play. And to help, we created an online caregiving resource center. At aarp.org/caregiving, you can find resources and connect with the caregiving community. Together, we can better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving to learn more. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
To plan your life celebration. Because you are loved. Your life matters. And it should be celebrated.
Listen to News Talk 590 WVLK live anywhere, anytime at WVLKAM.com.
Minutes away from 10 o'clock, News Talk 590 WVLK. This is an interesting program because we're talking about high-risk behavior and how that affects the possibility of you being involved in a violent crime. This is Price. Good morning, Price.
Good morning, Jack. Ray. First of all, Ray, thank you for all the work your office does. It's one of the better offices in the world, I think.
Well, I always liked your judgment.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, my question is why does Fayette County have to go to the expense of sending two officers to California, make an arrest, apprehend this guy, then turn around and come back to Lexington, and then we have to turn around and send two sheriff's deputies back to California to bring him home?
Well, that's a legitimate question.
Yeah.
But the responsibility of the detectives is to solve the crime, and legally, under Kentucky law, the transporting office is the sheriff's department. So it's what the law is. But it's a great question.
Thank you, Price.
we want a really quick, how did you resolve this case, Andrea? Because we got a couple of other topics we want to try to cover.
Each of the shooters, they all pled guilty to murder and received a 30-year sentence. And Brittany Shipman pled to the robbery and received a 10-year sentence.
Okay. Now, the question, was this a murder that occurred in the course of a robbery in the first degree?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
How's that changed?
Well,
things?
Now, that makes it an aggravated murder and available for the death penalty. And this is a great example of how we infrequently have to go ahead and let defendants plead guilty because and not seek the death penalty because in this case, we couldn't identify who was
which
the shooter,
was the, okay.
You see?
Yeah.
And it's always an evidentiary problem that causes us to do that. And we don't like to, but we did in this case. Well done. Now, how did the victim's mother and family take all of this, Brianna?
They were very pleased. They just wanted to make sure that the gentleman and the female actually did have to pay and serve some time in prison. So they were very happy with the results.
Right.
Are you very, very, probably never used the term, I'm assuming, closure with these families of the victims?
Unfortunately, it depends. Some victims need a little more follow-up, but I usually try to at least make one contact a year with the victim after a case is closed.
I guess my point is the term will bring closure to this. Mm-hmm. If you've lost your son, there is no closure.
You just ask Don Turpin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, because when he comes in here.
It's like it happened yesterday.
Yes.
Here we are 30 years later,
right.
and he starts crying right here on your show.
Yeah.
A couple of quick things. Number one is don't snitch and people not getting involved. Is that an issue for us in cases around here, Pete?
Yes, it is, because this is a mindset. This is a culture that's that people run around saying, and it's this culture has a lot of people being scared to pick up the phone and call the police or to stop and talk to us and let us know what's going on. So we're trying to do things to put this culture down and to get people to come forward.
How do you do it?
It's hard. I mean, you just have to do the best you can and talk with people. Sometimes you just have to leave a card and people will call you back at a later time. But any little thing you can do will help.
It's huge, isn't it?
Yes, very huge.
It's a big problem. There's a videotape of a homicide that occurred, and somebody was shooting a gun out of a car into another car. There were eight people standing around the shooter's car, and when the police talked to them, nobody saw anything, nobody heard anything. And we got to get past that. We have to get past that.
We got a minute left, and I wanted you to comment because it's a big news story right now about this latest person that they sent to the death chamber, and it took 2 hours to kill the guy. What's
right.
up with
well,
that?
Well, first of all, if you pay attention and you know about these things, and I pay attention to them, this guy was asleep during this time. He was gasping. Took him 2 hours to die. But what I think about, Jack, are the people that he killed. And I spend more time worrying about the trauma and the fear and the horrible situation of the people who were killed by this slug and spend almost no time worrying about him being a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Too
okay.
bad.
Too bad. But there's got to be a way we can do that quicker.
Sure. There are all kinds of ways.
We can think of different ways. They kill their victims quicker.
Yeah.
Thank you. Stand by. We have an update from ABC. If you're listening to WVLK AM, stay with us for Live with Lee. If you're
through chemotherapy, to not think too much, just to focus on what you're trying to do right then and keep doing it.
Zycon is found.